We have 20-1637, Rudisill v. McDonough. Ms. Fomenkova?
Yes,
Fomenkova. Ms. Fomenkova, please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. This case is about one aspect of how Congress integrated the post-9/11 program of education benefits on top of the existing program of Montgomery education benefits. And specifically, the question before the court is how many months of post-9/11 benefits Congress gave to veterans who have used some, but not all, of their Montgomery benefits when they elected to switch to the post-9/11 program. And in statutory terms, that question comes down to whom does the limit in 3327D2 apply? And does the universe of certain individuals that are encompassed by that limit exclude veterans with multiple periods of qualifying service? And it does not. Section 3327 does not differentiate between veterans based on how they earned their dual entitlement to Montgomery and post-9/11 benefits. It doesn't say anything about periods of service. And therefore, the limitation in 3327D2 applies to all veterans who have used but retain unused Montgomery benefits when they elect to switch to the post-9/11 program, because they are then described in 3327A1A, and that is what 3327D2 specifically refers to.
What would Congress have had to say to ensure that your friend on the other side would receive benefit under these circumstances? I mean, Congress could have done it, right? You agreed Congress could have explicitly said it. What would it have said?
Certainly, they could have included a specific limitation that the election in 3327A1A is not just limited to veterans who have used but retained unused Montgomery benefits, but that also have that dual entitlement based on a single period of service. So we see, for example, Congress addressing specifically veterans with a single period of service in 3322H, and Congress could have included an express limitation in defining the universe of certain individuals by referring to the number of periods of service that they have. They just didn't do that here.
Can I ask you this question, because I'm trying to consider the following example, which is not too far off this, but is this. So suppose you have a veteran with 72 months of service, so independently qualifying periods of service, at least 36 months after September 11th, so qualifies for Chapter 33 as well as Chapter 30. Suppose on August 1st, 2009, that veteran has used all but 10 months of the Chapter 30 benefits. So the veteran comes out of service and then uses the 10 months of Montgomery and then applies for post-9/11. Does he get them?
He does.
Now, how is that possible under the language of 3327? He, on August 1st, 2009, is a person covered by A1A. You can't change that fact by later developments. He was such a person, which means D2 would seem to apply, subject to something, and D2 says he gets zero because the number of months of Montgomery that he has at the time of election, which is what D2 describes, is zero. Yet you say he can get the Chapter 33. How?
Well, because the election in your hypothetical happens at the time that he wants to use the post-9/11 benefits. So if he uses the remaining 10 months of Montgomery and at that point in time elects to use post-9/11, then he is no longer described in A1A because at the time...
A1A is absolutely time-specific. It says, as of August 1st, 2009... he had some unused benefits. It doesn't matter for purposes of that qualification what he has at the time he makes the election.
But 3327D2 limits it to the number of months of unused entitlement of the individual under Chapter 30 of this title as of the date of the election.
Which would be zero.
but he's then, at the time of the election, no longer described by A1A.
No, that's just not true. A1A is absolutely fixed in time as to the description. So it seems to me that if, as I think you very much have repeatedly said and want to say, that the person can get the 12 months, it must be because the word elect doesn't apply. In which case, we're talking about looking for a meaning of elect more than just apply for, like exchange or convert or swap. That's what I'm focused on.
So I think my main reaction to that question is that if Your Honor is correct about what happens to that veteran, that sort of changes.
I don't know. You have a position about what happens to that veteran, which is he can still get 12 months.
Yes.
Of Chapter 33.
Right. And that's the way that the VA has interpreted this provision to allow that.
My point is, if that's true, I don't see a linguistic opening for that position in 3327 except to narrow the meaning of the word elect.
So I think if the VA is wrong about that interpretation, that doesn't change what happens to Mr. Rudisill here.
Well, if you're wrong about the interpretation, but you press an interpretation that seems to have some implication for the term elect, which is the term that I think necessarily Mr. Rudisill is pressing on to say it really applies only to a kind of exchange, a swap, a conversion. It doesn't apply to simply choosing to apply under 3323 in the normal course for Chapter 33 benefits for just because you happen to be one of those people listed in 3327A1A, because he's not doubly exploiting the same basis for in service for the different benefits. I'll stop there.
Right, and I think the sort of the VA is not relying on a narrower definition of the word elect. I think the way that the VA treats the benefit, the veteran who exhausts the 36 months of Montgomery at the time of election, is that they just no longer meet the terms of A1A, and that's why they get the additional 12 months of benefits. I think if the court is sort of views that differently in terms of the veteran who has exhausted their Montgomery benefits, that might be an argument that they also don't get the additional 12 months, but I don't think it changes the fact that 3327A1A here applies to Mr. Rudisill and covers Mr. Rudisill because at the time of his election, he was described by A1A.
How do you interpret the word elect in 3327A?
It is that you apply to use those benefits. You elect to use the post 9/11 program. And
you don't think it means convert?
I don't think it is limited to conversion. I think that 3327 generally is a provision that allows a veteran to switch from Montgomery benefits to post 9/11 benefits. But
are you able to make a statutory argument looking at 3327A1 to explain why you respond to Judge Toronto's question to you? I'm trying to understand because your response seems to be, well, this is the way we interpret it, but I'm having a hard time also seeing your interpretation and how it aligns with the plain language of the statute.
Well, it's the fact that sort of you can elect under 3327A1A if you meet the parameters of A1A. The person who is taking their post 9/11 benefits at when they're not covered by the subsets of A1, excuse me, A through F, they're not electing under this provision. They are electing to use post 9/11 benefits, but I don't think they're electing under the terms of 3327, and therefore, because they don't meet the parameters of who's allowed to elect under 3327. And so, which is why the VA allows that.
Right, but I mean, I think you understand the point. The problem is that the qualification is day specific. Once you, as of August 1st, 2009, fall under these descriptions, that will never change. It can't change. not under the text.
But again, I think I go back to the fact that, you're making an election at that point in time under a different provision. You are still making an election to use post-9/11 benefits, but you're no longer making an election under A1A at that point in time because you're not, if you've exhausted your Montgomery benefits, you have not used but retain unused benefits. Whereas
so
Mr. Rudisill.
Was the veteran warned at the time that if he takes this path, he's forfeiting the opportunity to have the additional 12 months of benefits?
Absolutely.
Was he warned explicitly that this is an election that you're making?
Yes, Your Honor, and it appears at the top of the form that the veteran has to fill out in order to apply for benefits, and we see Mr. Rudisill's form and the appendix in this case here at pages 585, and it, at the very top, it sets out that you have to acknowledge that if you're, by electing Chapter 33 benefits, I acknowledge that I understand the following, and it includes the fact that if electing Chapter 33 in lieu of Chapter 30, my months of entitlement after Chapter 33 will be limited to the number of months of entitlement remaining under Chapter 30 on the effective date of my election. However, if I completely exhaust my entitlement under Chapter 30 before the effective date of my Chapter 33 election, I may receive up to 12 additional months of benefits under Chapter 33.
So by that time, the veteran has reenlisted and is now seeking the education benefits. Are they told at the time of the recruitment that we'd like you to reenlist and you get 48 months of education benefits? And the general statements that we've all seen that accompany the pitch to reenlist says, however, unless you're a lawyer and can read the fine print and understand the statutes and so on, you're not going to get the 48 months that we're promising you.
So, Your Honor, I'm not sure exactly what the recruitment office says at the time of recruitment.
Isn't it not? As I understand it, I'm not in that loop, but as I understand it, education benefits are announced as a significant benefit of reenlisting.
Certainly, I think education benefits do play a role in the recruitment and enlistment. I would note that I think the sort of clear default presumption by Congress, both in the Montgomery and in the post-9/11 statute, is that the exchange for active duty service is presumptively 36 months. We help you get a four-year college degree, and that 48 months is really sort of the exception to that rule and under unique circumstances.
Well, it includes children and so on. I mean, it's all of this pitch of the total of 48 months has been, as I understand it, significantly enhanced in order to encourage recruitment, and that there's still a problem. We're still understaffed.
So I'm not sure if the recruitment focuses on 48 months specifically. I think because the default presumption is 36 months, certainly I would agree that education benefits, I'm sure, feature in the recruitment process. But at the time that you apply for benefits, there's no question that the veteran is sort of explicitly and in plain English and sees at the form how the VA interprets the statute and how the VA has consistently applied it.
The bridge. You've made what they're told is an irrevocable election. Can't turn the clock back. Can't fix it. You're stuck.
I mean, yes, you are therefore, before you submit the form, you're warned at the top that the election that you're making here is irrevocable. If you proceed to nevertheless make that election, then the statute does make it irrevocable.
Could I back you up a moment so that I understand better what's going on here? As I understand it, no matter how many periods of service you have, under the Montgomery program, you only earn 36 months of benefits. That's correct?
That's correct.
And the same thing is true of the 9/11 program. No matter how many periods of service you have, you still earn only 36 months of benefits.
Exactly.
Okay. And now, in 2011, Congress enacted 3322H, which requires this election by someone who has a single period of service. That is, someone who's only served 36 months. So that person now has to elect one or the other, the goal being to prevent that person from getting more than 36 months of benefits, even though he or she only qualifies for both the Montgomery and 9/11 programs, right?
Correct.
And so that person who has to elect either Montgomery or 9/11 isn't someone anymore who's covered by 3327D, right?
Exactly.
So 3327D has to be only applied to people with multiple periods of service.
After 2011, that's true, yes.
Could you clarify why that's necessarily so? I mean, that reading of 3327 only applying to veterans with multiple periods of service seems to hinge on the idea that an election under 3322H is irrevocable. And I don't see that in the text of 3322. I mean, you look at 3327I, for example, that clearly informs us that Congress wanted a 3327 election to be irrevocable, but nothing in 3322 tells me that a 3322H election is irrevocable.
So I think
in the same way. The inference there is clear that it's not irrevocable.
So I disagree with that, Your Honor. I think it's irrevocable sort of by the inherent nature of what 3322H does, because it limits your eligibility.
Where in the text does it tell me that I have to think of a 3322H election as irrevocable? In the same way that 3327I tells me expressly that a 3327 election is irrevocable.
So it comes from two things, I would say, Your Honor. One is that 3322H1 requires you to elect under which authority the service should be credited, that establishes eligibility. And so once you credit that service, it can no longer establish eligibility for another program. And so you just don't meet the entitlement terms for post 9/11, and you therefore are not.
Why is that statement different in character than the election you have to make under 3327A, which says you have to elect, you know, which chapter you want assistance under?
Well, I think they're both irrevocable. So
yeah, because of 3327I, we know that about 3327 elections.
Well, 3327A and 2 requires that at the date of the election, the veteran meet the requirements for entitlement to educational assistance under this chapter, i.e. under post 9/11. And if they've already credited their service under 3322H to Montgomery, then they no longer have service that meets the requirements for entitlement to post 9/11.
Well, isn't the answer that 3322H was explicitly designed to prevent a veteran with a single period of service from getting more than 36 months of benefits, and that's why the election is irrevocable. You can take one program, get 36 months of benefits, but you can't switch to the other program and get more than 36 months. That's exactly what the legislative history says.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. Congress sort of explicitly set up that, precisely that example, and then said...
The point of the amendment sure that nobody with a single period of service ever got more than 36 months of educational benefits. That I understand. You can't double dip in the sense you exhaust 36 months of Montgomery and then come back on the same period of service and then ask for more benefits under 9/11, even though you technically qualify for 9/11. I understand that. But that doesn't tell me anything about why 3322H bars a veteran midstream from switching over, say, the first 12 months starting with Montgomery and then switching over the last 24 into 9/11, that still ends up with a total of 36 months, and that's the 36-month cap that was intended, as I understand from the amendment, to create 3322H.
So I think the... I think 3322H does address both, and the legislative history suggests that Congress intended it to be not just that you can't go beyond 36 months, but that your sort of one period of service gets you one program.
Can I just ask you about a textual matter, which maybe I've just misread it. While I think that paragraph in the Senate report from 3322H is really quite clear about what it's getting at, doesn't the text actually say that this applies only to people who have three eligibilities, not two? It says you have to have Chapter 30, either 30 or 32, and Title 10, 1606 or 1607, which is about reservists. Is that just a textual mistake? Because and means and.
Well, I think this is where, you know, this is why Oxford commas are sometimes important, but also commas are sometimes...
This isn't an Oxford comma problem.
Well, because it's, I think the and there is that it is setting up, you have chapter 33, and then...
Elsewhere, Congress was really quite clear when it wanted just to hit a dual overlap. I suspect that this is just a mistake, but it's not then a textual argument you're making. You're making a point about what the Senate report, the legislative history, let's call it context, makes clear Congress was up to, unless I've missed something about the text.
I think the text covers, envisions a situation where it does include all three, but you don't have to be eligible for all three in order to have to make the election. So if you have Chapter 33 and Chapter 30, you have to credit, or if you have Chapter 33 and the 1607, then you have to credit those. The point is that if you have a single period of service, even if it could go to one of these three programs, you have to pick one. And you can pick whichever one you want of the three, but you have to pick one. And so I think that's the...
You also said something in your brief which intrigued me, and I couldn't quite figure out what a word meant. You said that if 3327 was limited to, let's call them single period of service veterans, so 36-month service veterans, that would make 3322H virtually superfluous. You seem to have something in mind, some concrete example where there wouldn't be a superfluousness, and I couldn't figure out what it was.
Yeah, so 3322H is only effective as of August 1st, 2011. So if your single period of service comes before August 1st, 2011, then you are allowed to sort of double credit it and get both Montgomery and post 9/11 benefits. So because 3322H was enacted 2 years after the post 9/11 program went to effect, there's a universe of veterans to whom it doesn't apply. So that is where the virtually comes from.
If I were to agree that 3327 applies to all veterans, regardless of whether they have a single period of service or multiple periods of service, does your interpretation of 3322H your interpretation of it necessary for you to prevail in this case?
I don't think the court needs to reach 3322H in order to interpret 3327.
That's what I'm trying to understand is there something about your reading of 3322H that you need in order to prevail?
No, Your Honor. I think in our view, certainly 3322H was the subject of a lot of focus from Mr. Rudisill, and we think he misinterprets that provision. But the court does not need to reach 3322H at all in order to reverse the Veterans Court and adopt what we say submit as the plain reading of 3327.
Because there's just no textual hook in 3327 or anywhere else that restricts the application of 3327 to veterans with multiple periods of service?
Exactly, Your Honor. Or the reverse, I think, is what they actually want it to be. But there's no textual hook that would differentiate between veterans based on their number of periods of service in 3327.
Looking at the history of the various GI Bill programs that Congress has passed, it seems to me, and I wonder if you would agree, that those programs are progressive in nature, and they've extended benefits and created new benefits over time as opposed to creating limits. And here we're looking for the first time, unless you can point to something else similar to this, where a veteran has earned through period of service, which is demonstrated, earned eligibility in different programs, but yet the participation in that program is curtailed, is limited. Am I correct that we're looking at a unique situation here?
So I would say two things, Your Honor. I do agree that I don't think 3327 has a historical analog because we have not in the past had sort of two ongoing parallel programs for active duty service. But in terms of sort of what is the direction that the history of VA benefits tracks, I don't think we can make that statement.
But there's been overlapping programs before, right? I mean, the Korean War and the regular GI Bill, the Montgomery Bill, there's veterans, there's overlapping there between those programs.
So the programs themselves are not overlapping. The periods of service that would count for the GI Bill and would count for Korea were distinct. And the GI Bill, I think, was sunset.
So there was no need to create a limitation in those, with respect to those programs. But here, the limitation has come in because there's an overlap.
Right. It's a unique situation with the fact that the post-9/11 program
Isn't that on its face contrary to what Congress has proposed and the purpose of Congress passing the GI bills? Isn't that on its face contrary to that purpose, this limitation? I mean, it may not be fair or it may be unjust, but the limitation is there, correct?
The limitation is there, and I don't think it's contrary to Congress's purpose in passing these statutes. I think when we look at Montgomery and post 9/11, it's clear that sort of the presumptive trade that Congress envisioned.
When you review these regulations for the first time, or you get this case, it does cause you to think, doesn't it? It does cause you to pause and wonder why here do we have this limitation? Is it a limitation? To what extent?
I think it reflects the fact that sort of the presumptive trade is that you get 36 months of benefits for active duty service. And that's what this limitation sort of continues. And so if you serve on active duty, we help you get a 4-year degree. Well, and that's...
If that's the case then, and we begin this whole process with the understanding that we're looking at a limitation of benefits, and in this case, we need to keep in mind that the veteran here, we're not giving him anything free. He's not looking for an award or damages. They're his. He's earned it. He's paid his dues. It's a period of service. He's paid his dues. Why would we not start in that interpretation of these statutes and regulation by saying that we need to look at this in favor of the veteran? We need to take a position that's going to preserve the benefits as opposed to limit them.
So, Your Honor, I mean, a couple things. I think that we have to start with the language of the statute as Congress enacted it, and all benefits that Congress provides are inherently limited. And in this case, the sort of what is good for one veteran may not be good for another veteran. Education.
They're not limited if you've earned them. I mean, once you prove eligibility, they're not limited.
They are absolutely limited. The program only gives you, under Montgomery or post 9/11, you only get 36 months of benefits no matter how long you serve.
Unless you serve two periods of service, then you get to enjoy up to 48 months of educational assistance. And that's, I think, ultimately, I have the same question as Judge Reyna. Is this just an unfortunate, unintended consequence of the way the statute is written? Or do you really think Congress intended to cut off a veteran with multiple periods of assistance opportunity to enjoy 48 months of educational assistance if they happen to switch over midstream between Montgomery and over to 9/11 benefits? It seems a little strange that they would purposely seek out cutting off that veteran from enjoying the full 48 months that he's entitled to.
So I don't think Congress is cutting them off. I think veterans still have the option of getting 48 months. What 3327 recognizes is that different veterans have different priorities, and some people are, you know, because it does provide extra money, for example, per month for veterans who make the election under 3327A, and that some veterans might prefer that. And so the election itself is voluntary. It preserves the flexibility to the veteran as to what they would prefer. And I see I'm almost out of...
The statute certainly doesn't expressly say your position. That is that if the veteran decides to continue to have the Montgomery benefits, then they would be able to have a full 48 months. if they exhaust their Montgomery benefits first?
I think because you then fall outside of the
My question, though, is whether it expressly says that. I mean, I think it
doesn't preclude it, and therefore the VA has interpreted to allow that.
I share this concern. Show me where it says that the veteran needs to exhaust. What is the word exhaust in these statutes?
The veteran's not required to exhaust. The veteran has the option to exhaust. If the veteran does not exhaust, then he meets the terms of A1A.
That's what a gun to the veteran's head. If they don't exhaust, then they don't get to move on with their education or utilizing their benefits.
I disagree with that. They can use their benefits. It's just that they are limited to the express limitation that Congress imposed. And I see that I'm out of time, so I will.
Thank you.
There are no other
so
questions.
Over. Mr. McHugh.
May it please the Court. This case, I'll disagree with my friend across the aisle. This case is about whether Congress imposed a revoke or exhaustion requirement in the post-9/11 program for veterans with a separate period of qualifying service.
Do you agree that no matter how many periods of service you have, you can't earn more than 36 months under the Montgomery program, and you can't earn more than 36 months under the 9/11 program?
Yes, we agree with that, Your Honor. Okay. Absolutely. Yes, that is true. And here the government admits that Mr. Rudisill has that separately qualifying service, and that it entitles him to a separate benefit under the post-9/11 GI Bill. It's the government's burden to point to an express requirement of the statute that imposes this ultimate limiting factor on his entitlement. All they can point to, however, is a pregnant silence that they find in the statutory scheme under the benefit exchange election provisions, which are...
Do you contend that if 3327D applies to people with multiple periods of service, would you agree that you would lose under those circumstances?
No, Your Honor. We would only lose under that circumstance if Mr. Rudisill was obligated to engage in a benefit exchange election, which he was not because he has separate qualifying service that he can point to the post-9/11 program to establish his entitlement independently. The benefit exchange election provisions mean harmonizing. That's what the Veterans Court defined coordination to mean. It's what every court that has ever looked at the word coordination in a statute or other written instrument has understood it to mean, including this court's predecessor in 1958, in the application of right.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying. How is it that if 3327 applies to veterans with multiple periods of service, that it doesn't impose the limitation on getting more than 36 months if you switch from Montgomery to 9/11? What language suggests that the statute doesn't apply under those circumstances?
Well, Your Honor, the statute applies to a veteran when they are trying to establish their post-9/11 entitlement based on the same period of service that established their Montgomery entitlement. And the language that I would point to specifically is in the benefit exchange election provisions itself. It talks about coordination of entitlement. Entitlement is indisputably based on a specific period of service that the veteran has used to establish the prior entitlement, to vest that entitlement under the Montgomery program. And if a veteran only has, for example, that one period of service and they're already locked into the Montgomery program, they can engage in a benefit exchange election to convert to the post-9/11 program.
Can you address 3322H? It seemed to me that one of the important stumbling blocks for your argument, maybe the most important, is the idea that 3322H would be rendered superfluous, or 3327 would be rendered superfluous under the view that 3327 applies only to conversion, exchange, trade, swapping, whatever it is, of entitlement based on the very same period of service.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree that...
Is it not superfluous, or do you say it's superfluous, but don't worry about that for the following jurisprudential reasons?
No, Your Honor, we don't think that is superfluous. I think that, and it came out in the questions from the bench in opening argument, Nothing in 3322H1 says that an election under that provision is irrevocable. Congress has specified in other contexts, including under 3327, when an election is irrevocable. So based on the plain language of H1, a veteran can take service that on its face could qualify for one or another benefit.
I think the government's counsel made a point that I guess I'll put this way. 3322H, assuming it does apply to dual as opposed to triple eligibility, says you have to credit service for a particular program. And once you say you have a 36-month veteran and that the Chapter 30, the Montgomery program, requires 36 months of service to get anything, once you credit it, that's what got you any Montgomery benefits at all. It doesn't matter. You don't get to use 12 months of that to get 12 months of Montgomery benefits. You needed to use all 36 months of your service to get any Montgomery benefits, and once you've credited that, you can't recredit it, or you would have been getting whatever Montgomery benefits midstream you used illegitimately.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not quite sure how the Secretary gets to that point when the plain language of the statutes clearly allows someone to make a second election once they've credited service to one program. The legislative history bears out a very specific hypothetical situation of a veteran using the same service to then, after exhausting Montgomery entitlement, establish entitlement to the post 9/11 GI Bill. But 3322H1, nor 3322D or 3327 are so limited. They say that a veteran can first point service to the Montgomery program, and then under D and 3327, that same veteran plainly can engage in a benefit exchange election for whatever reason, if they want to choose to switch later.
So, but that under that interpretation of 3322H, you can get more than 36 months of benefits, because by switching from one program to the other, you're no longer limited to the 36 months of each of the programs separately.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree. If you make that switch, if you engage in a benefit exchange election and have used some of your Montgomery entitlement or none at all, and you still have the full 36 months of Montgomery, when you engage in the benefit exchange election, according to the procedures of 3327, 3327D2 applies.
So I'm not understanding what you're saying. How is it that 3322H limits the single period of service veteran to 36 months if he's or she is allowed to switch programs?
It is based on the formula in 3327D2, which provides that if for a veteran who's making a benefit exchange election, if they've used some of their Montgomery entitlement, they can only get the equivalent amount of remaining.
3327D2 doesn't accomplish the congressional purpose that's reflected in 3322H. It doesn't prevent a single period of service veteran from getting more than 36 months of benefits.
Well, Your Honor, I think, again, we don't read 3322H in exactly that way. It simply says that any qualifying service, which is the language that the statute uses, can only be used to establish entitlement to one benefit. However, that has to be read together with the clear benefit exchange election provision.
So in your view, under 3322H doesn't really limit you to 36 months. If you elect to switch programs, you can get more than 36 months.
But no, Your Honor. If you switch programs, you are limited to the amount of benefits that you are converting into the post 9/11 program.
To be clear, when we're talking the statute, we're talking about multiple periods of service. Isn't that right? Not what you're entitled to for single periods, or what you're entitled to when there's only a single statute, such as Montgomery.
Yes, Your Honor.
We're talking about reenlistment. Multiple periods of service, such that in the ordinary course, if we didn't have these overlaps, there would be a fresh period of entitlement to education benefits. And that what Congress did, and I thought that all that they did, was to say, yes, that's right, but a total of 48 months is all you get. And that ends it. And the rest of this, of what happens when if you're under a single statute and so on, is not an issue in this case. It may be unresolved in the statute, but it hadn't come up because it's not this case. Is that accurate? We're talking about multiple periods with a gap, with a reenlistment, And as it turns out here, there are also enhanced benefits for the period of reenlistment. And you're entitled to those enhanced benefits, seem to me to be the congressional purpose, but no more than a total of 48 months of education benefits total. Is that an oversimplification, or is that what Congress thought it was doing?
No, I do not think that's an oversimplification, Your Honor. I think you're exactly right. You know, Mr. Rudisill has, as the Secretary concedes, has very clear separate periods of qualifying service. It's notable that his Montgomery entitlement is based on service that predates 9/11. It is not eligible under the post-9/11 program at all. He has established entitlement to the Montgomery program based on that service, some of which does overlap into after post-9/11, but regardless, a lot of it is pre-9/11. And then he has several years that are totally separate in the post-9/11 era that establishes his post-9/11 entitlement, and that's what he seeks to do here. Congress included multiple statutory indicators, which are mirror images of similar provisions in all the other GI Bill programs that tell you that it fully understood and expected that veterans with separately qualifying periods of service would be able to have separately establish that entitlement and then use those benefits consecutively. That's under 3311 and 3312, where it set the default presumption that for a period of qualifying service under the post-9/11 program, that the veteran is entitled to, as the statute says, 36 months of benefits. And separately, under H1 and 3322C, it required crediting of service to whether reserve service or active duty service that could qualify for multiple benefits to one program or another. Under the Montgomery program and the programs before that, the VA and Congress have always understood that that recognizes that a veteran who has other service can credit it to another program.
So let me do this. I guess this is pursuing, I think, what Judge Dyke was focusing on. So if you have the 36-month service veteran who has earned Montgomery and credited all the 36 months of service to get Montgomery and then uses 10 months or something of Montgomery, and then along comes, then the veteran decides, I want to recredit my remaining, the 26 months,
right,
to Chapter 33. What happens to that veteran? So that veteran is under 3327D2.
Right, and this is a veteran with a single period of service,
right,
in your
so
hypothetical,
Congress has
Your Honor.
Allowed that recrediting and kind of the counting of even the 10 months that haven't been recredited. But that veteran can't then apply under 3311, 3312 to get additional Chapter 33 benefits. Is that right? Because that veteran can't use the unrecredited or something benefits for something additional. Is that?
Mostly, Your Honor. I mean, how I would characterize it is, in your hypothetical, there's a veteran with a single period of service,
yeah,
who has used 10 months of Montgomery benefits, correct?
Right.
That's your hypothetical. So under 3327...
And if that was on August 1st, 2009, that's a 3327A1A veteran.
Right. So the veteran has used the 10 months of benefits and now is seeking to take their period of service that established the Montgomery program entitlement and switch it over to post-9/11. That person would be described in 3327A1A, is entitled to and has used but retains unused entitlement under this chapter. He then, when making a benefit exchange election, would be subject to 3327D1 and 2, which imposes a limitation on how many months of benefits that person can get under the post-9/11 program. So they have used 10 months under Montgomery and get
and
the
Mr.
balance.
Mr. Rudisill is different because he can apply under 3311 for Chapter 33 benefits, the post-9/11, without any regard to anything credited or recredited that he used for Montgomery.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That's our position. Because he has that separately qualifying service, he noted on his application form that he was using service that was different than the service that established his entitlement to Montgomery benefits. He cites his 2004 to 2011 service, which is not the basis for his Montgomery entitlement. So under 3322H1, that service could on its face qualify for Montgomery or post-9/11, his 2004 to 2011 service, and he chose to credit it to, in 2015, after H-1 is in existence, he chooses to credit it to post-9/11 directly, establishing his entitlement to that program.
The concern I have with that view of a veteran with multiple periods of service being able to just go back to 3311 is that 3322 tells us what to do without restriction as to single period of service veterans or multiple service period veterans, how to coordinate between programs for a veteran that qualifies under all these various chapters, chapter 30 and this particular chapter 33. And 3322D tells us and tells the VA to go look at 3327. And then when we look at 3327, nothing in the text of 3327 restricts its application to a veteran with just a single period of service. And so it seems like it would apply to all veterans, regardless of how many service periods they have. And so why doesn't 3322 funnel us to 3327 when it comes to a veteran, regardless of whether they have one period of service or multiple periods of service, into getting channeled into 3327 according to 3322D?
Your Honor, I think that the absence of any indication as to whether the benefit exchange election provisions apply to a single or multiple periods of service actually helps inform its meaning when read together with the rest of 3322. If the Secretary is correct that 3322D and 3327 require anyone with Montgomery entitlement to revoke or exhaust that before establishing post-9/11 entitlement, much of 3322A would be mere surplusage.
I'm sorry, that's not the government's position. The government's position is that if you are one of the A1A people and you choose, before you're done with Montgomery, to take 33 instead, then D2 says you've lost the otherwise fuller entitlement to Chapter 33. Government's position is not mandatory choice, just here's the consequence of the choice you make.
That's correct, Your Honor, but effectively, I mean, in practice, their view is that the only way for a veteran in that scenario to be able to tap into their post-9/11 benefits is to make the supposedly voluntary choice that they're noting, or exhaust their Montgomery entitlement, and then ultimately only be able to get 12 months of post-9/11 benefits under the 48-month cap. So their view is that if you are a veteran, no matter how long you've served, if you happen to have Montgomery entitlement, which in essence is every veteran who served in the post-9/11 era, they sign up for Montgomery when they enlist, they start establishing that entitlement, so they have entitlement to Montgomery benefits, all of those veterans would have to first revoke that Montgomery entitlement or exhaust it, even if they have separately qualifying service. And if that's true, then 3322A, which separately bans or prohibits the concurrent use of Chapter 30, Chapter 33, and a host of other GI Bill programs that are also subject to 3327, all those provisions would be meaningless. Why would 3322A separately say you can't use these benefits concurrently if 3322D and 3327 had that same net effect? They would never let anybody use the benefits concurrently because they would have to, it forces you to revoke or exhaust that entitlement, effectively preventing separately established entitlements in that sense.
Counselor, help me understand something. So in 3322H, the bar to duplication of eligibility based on a single period or period of service, towards the very end it says, shall elect under which authority such services to be credited. What does authority mean? The remainder of the statute talks about programs and chapters and provisions and things of that nature. And here, Congress chose to use the word authority. The election is to the authority. What does that mean?
Your Honor, I believe that refers to the benefits educational programs themselves under which statutory authority to receive educational assistance. I think that's what I would say.
Elect that by appointing to a particular provision or to a particular section or subsection of the Act?
I think fundamentally would be to point their qualifying service to the entitlement criteria of a program. So under Chapter 30, it would be to say I'm taking my 36 months of post-9/11 service that is described in 3311 and saying that is what I'm using to establish my entitlement to post-9/11 benefits. And the same for Montgomery or same for any of the other programs. But I think, I mean, to answer your question, the authority is the is a program as a whole to say this is what I'm basing my entitlement on. So an additional indicator in the statute that Congress fully expected and understood that veterans would be able to have these separately established entitlements is the inclusion of Chapter 30 and Chapter 33 side by side under Section 3695, which is Congress's longstanding aggregate cap on the combined uses of separately established entitlements. It's historically has been understood to recognize that there are going to be veterans who have these separate entitlements, and it's just an additional indicator that Congress was fully aware this would be possible. And again, nothing that the Secretary points to actually expressly says what he argues is what obviously Congress intended. There is nothing, no language in 3322D or 3327 that either make it mandatory to follow those procedures or say that it is the only way to establish entitlement to post 9/11 benefits. The balance of the statutory scheme clearly contemplates consecutive usage of benefits subject to other regulation, such as the concurrent use of them and up to an aggregate cap, and not being able to double dip in the sense of using the same service to establish that the separate entitlements. And the Secretary has simply...
Can I just kind of say, you may have said this already, but say it again, and if this is a repetition. What work does 3322D do in your view?
3322D informs the Secretary and veterans that if they want to coordinate an entitlement, an existing entitlement, if they want to harmonize that, it tells them where what procedures to follow in that event. It is a form of a bar to duplication of benefits under Section 3322.
I understand, I think, what work it would have done between August 1st, 2009, and the effective date in 2011, I guess, of the addition of 3322H. What work, if any, does 3322D do once 3322H is added to the statute?
Your Honor, I think that 3322D continues to operate in the same way. We don't view H, the effective date of H1, as being the point from which it applies to service. That's just when it went into effect. It stands alone in the statutory scheme. It has no limiting date on its face, H1. Congress, you know, knew when to put in dates to make programs or statutory provisions effective, such as in 3327. It's not actually in the statute of H1. So H1, you know, again, today would require a veteran to credit service to one program or another. And if down the road they want to switch that decision or switch that election, they can under the benefit exchange election provisions of 3322D and 3327. They can convert later.
Kelson, does a pro-veteran standard of statutory interpretation apply here in this case, and if so, at what point?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. Our position is that it applies at the outset. I mean, one, there's no controlling regulatory interpretation by the VA, so, you know, there's not a Chevron question here or anything of that nature. You know, we certainly believe that Congress, you know, approaches these statutory schemes in a pro-veteran manner, and it should be interpreted in that way from the outset by the court to try to make sense of what is going on here at all.
But, Counselor, your interpretation of 3327 would render 3327F and 3327G inapplicable to Mr. Rudisill. Is that correct?
It would make, Your Honor, it would make it inapplicable to him in this instance because he's not trying to coordinate his
inapplicable
benefits
to him and other veterans. So you're suggesting that the pro-veteran interpretation is your interpretation, but for other dissimilarly situated veterans, for example, those which have used very little of their Montgomery benefits and do decide to elect under 3327, they would get the 9/11 benefits plus the additional benefits of F and G. So your interpretation would read out and eliminate entitlement to those additional benefits by veterans. How is that definitively the pro-veteran position?
Well, Your Honor, our interpretation would not read that out for those veterans. If there's a veteran who wants to coordinate their benefits to be able to take advantage of, under the post 9/11 program, of the incentives offered under 3327F and G that would carry it over from the Montgomery program, one, under our view, there's no reason they can't do that. It's just, again, Mr. Rudisill was not trying to do that here. He was trying to preserve his Montgomery entitlement and establish more benefits under the post 9/11 program than a benefit exchange election would have allowed him. But secondly, the very similar provisions are organically under the post 9/11 program itself. I believe it's 3319 that creates the critical skills, benefits, and incentives and whatnot that the military can use to retain, you know, high-skilled veterans and service members that are what are described under 3327 F and G. So there is a way for veterans to continue to get those benefits under the post-9/11 program if that's what they want, if that's what they're trying to do.
I have a strange factual question. I've been curious all this time, why did Mr. Rudisill elect the way he did when the form clearly told him, and I understand you don't think he should have finished only two choices, but he was pursuing a 3-year divinity program master's at Yale, and the government laid out two choices for him. You can elect to forego your 10 months of Montgomery benefits and get 10 months of 9/11 benefits, or you can use your 10 months of Montgomery benefits and then get an additional 12 months of 9/11 benefits on top of that. Why did he make the election he did, which clearly seems disadvantageous to him? And it was laid out in those very clear terms at the top of page 541, which was his election sheet. It's a single sheet. It's right there. So why? What was the advantage to Mr. Rudisill of electing the way he did? Why did he do that?
Well, Your Honor, I think the record reflects that he did not appreciate that that would be the interpretation the VA would apply to him. I recognize the form says what it says, but there is no way for a veteran who wants to get their full...
I guess what I was trying to say, is there something I'm missing about why 10 months of 9/11 was somehow more advantageous than 10 months of Montgomery plus 12 months of 9/11? Is there anything I'm missing in that was just a mistake on Mr. Rudisill's part in failing to appreciate what the form said?
It's slightly different, actually, Your Honor. So what he was trying to get was 25 months and 15 days under the post-9/11
program. Yes, I understand what he was trying to get. The form laid out two options for him according to the government's view, right?
Right.
And he elected one of those two options on this form. He filled out the form and elected it. And that option left him with far fewer benefits than the other option on the form clearly articulated. And I'm wondering, did it leave him with fewer benefits? Am I missing something about how these operate? Is there something I don't understand that would explain why Mr. Rudisill chose 10 months of one, which is what the form gave him, over 10 months of one plus 12 months of the other?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, this is obviously a highly factual question that was not resolved by the Veterans Court, but I would submit to you that he did not understand that he would only be getting 10 months of benefits, notwithstanding what the form says. He thought that he would be getting the balance of what he could get under the post-9/11 program.
That goes to his mental state. I guess what I'm wondering, I think the answer to my question is that no, Your Honor, there's no logical reason that given these two alternatives, one would pick one over the other. Is that right? Is there a logical reason? Is there some additional benefit that I'm unaware of that he was entitled to by making the choice he chose?
Not in your specific situation, Your Honor, that you're describing.
His specific situation.
But he believed he was getting far more benefits than anything that you've described. He thought he was getting 25 months.
Yes, but the form says what it does. And under the language of the form, I'm wondering, would there be any reason somebody in Mr. Rudisill's position would choose as he did?
It would be hard to describe, I think, Your Honor. I mean, there would be a practical benefit, perhaps, for some to go ahead and get their post-9/11 benefits sooner.
Well, it looked from the record as if he was told that he needed to exhaust his Montgomery benefits first after he went back to school and had an additional entitlement. So he did that. So he went up to 36 months of Montgomery benefits and then sought the rest of the 48 months from the new statute under 9/11. At least that's what it looked like before the Veterans Court. And that all of these, I'll call them nuances, but whatever it is, complications that we're talking about here were too complicated. You use up what you've already earned, and then you go to the next one. And the only limitation is no more than 48 months altogether. That seems to be how it was presented in the Veterans Court. Does that match your understanding?
If I follow you correctly, Your Honor, yes.
Yes.
What,
really?
I'm slightly hard of hearing, so I'm not quite. I was going to restate the hypothetical. Mm. Generally speaking, the statutory scheme would let you exhaust one benefit and then go and apply for another benefit and receive the balance under the other program, subject to the 48-month cap. So if that's what you're describing.
That is not what Mr. Rudisill sought to do, nor what he did in this case, is it, counsel?
That's exactly right, Your Honor, because the form does not let him do that. He was attempting, and to expand on my answer earlier, Your Honor, he, again, believed that he would be getting more post 9/11 benefits because they're extremely, they're far more valuable than Montgomery benefits. He was trying to go to Yale Divinity School, which would cost far more than the Montgomery program would have paid. So when he thought that after lining everything up, getting admitted to Yale, getting approval from the Army to come back, to go through Yale and become a chaplain, he thought that he was getting a significant amount of post 9/11 benefits, which would pay for his schooling, give him a housing stipend to support his family so that he could do that. Your Honor, he completed the form, yes, you know, voluntarily, in the sense that that's how you apply for benefits. He had to do that. It's the way that the VA form and the electronic system is set up. Absolutely.
And would another way of stating, I think, what you've been saying is that he thinks that the form was contrary to the statute in confining his choices.
That's right, Your Honor. If you look at the form on page 711 in the appendix, that is a blank form, but it is the form on one sheet, so you can actually look at it. I'll represent to the court that it's identical to how the electronic system is set up. If you say that you are seeking post 9/11 benefits, it forces you to then identify whether you have Montgomery entitlement, and if so, to revoke it. And that was the only way for him, when he submitted an electronic application, to proceed and to try to get the benefits from the VA. But he also separately identified that he was using a different period of service to establish that post 9/11 entitlement. So, you know, on balance, that's what he thought he was doing and not going to be subject to this benefit exchange election. There's also correspondence in the record between Mr. Rudisill and Senator Kane's office, like contemporaneously with these decisions and application, where he reflects that he did not believe that he was engaging in a benefit exchange election. And that's on the record at 534. I see I'm very nearly out of time, so unless the court has any questions.
You're actually beyond time. Thank you very much, Mr. McHugh.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I'd just like to note that we obviously have objected to the court's jurisdiction, so we would request that the court dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction, but if it reaches their merits, to affirm. Thank you.
Ms. Fomenkova, I'll give you 3 minutes of rebuttal time. If people ask questions, you can stay up longer, but you may not bring your pen with you this time. There you go. That wasn't to handicap you, it was to help you.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I would like to respond to a couple of things that Mr. McHugh noted. One is that 3327 is not an entitlement provision. It is a provision that coordinates existing entitlement. The entitlement comes from somewhere else, and I think Mr. Rudisill explicitly agrees with that in his briefing. And so the discussion about sort of the impact of 3322H, and that once you credit that service, 3327 doesn't talk about recrediting. It talks about having an existing entitlement and how you can elect between existing entitlements. And so there is, once you have credited under 3322H, that period of service no longer establishes an entitlement to a post 9/11, and so you no longer meet the terms of A2, which is a requirement for 3327. I will also make a factual correction. Mr. McHugh mentioned that 3327F, that there is a parallel provision under post 9/11. That is not the case. It can't be the case. 3327F returns to the veteran the portion of his contribution to Montgomery that was unused. Because the post 9/11 program does not have a contribution requirement, there would be no contribution to return. But the fact that Congress allowed the VA to return that portion of the contribution, that only works if the election is irrevocable, if we know what your unused portion of Montgomery is. And so under his interpretation, when you can switch back to Montgomery, use some post 9/11 benefits and then freely switch back to Montgomery, we actually then cannot pay you that additional bonus on top of your post 9/11 stipend, because we can't calculate it. We don't know what the unused portion of your Montgomery benefits would be. And so then under his interpretation, those veterans would be missing out potentially on that additional financial assistance that they could otherwise get under 3327. But at bottom, our position is that the language in 3327 is clear. It applies and describes Mr. Rudisill on its face and does not draw the kind of distinction between veterans based on the number of periods of service that the Veterans Court drew, and therefore this court should reverse the Veterans Court's interpretation.
Thank you, Ms. Fomenkova. Case is taken under submission.